You are listening to The Weekend Chapter on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.
All right, so it is still The Weekend Chapter right here on Adventist World Radio, powered by the SID Media. So, of course, we've been trying to dissect this particular topic right here on this relationship insight. We're talking about the black family, man, the average black family. They say that it leaves pretty much $0 to the next generation. So because of that, because it involves money, I decided to call the money man himself, Mr. Tapelo Moloi. Of course, you know him, man. He's all about business sense from Monday to Thursday. So I wouldn't think of anyone better to tackle this issue. So let me take this opportunity to welcome Mr. Tapelo Moloi to the Weekend Chapter. Tapsman, welcome.
Thank you so much, Marv. I must say that, like I always say, this is perhaps one of the coolest shows we have. So really, it's a pleasure to be here, and good afternoon to your listeners as well.
Wow! So the money man, I'm sure you've heard this question that I've been asking the listeners. The average black family, they say that it leaves $0 to the next generation, and it's not only in Africa, even in the diaspora as well. That's the thing. So I'm thinking, as far as you are concerned, what's your personal view? Do you really think that this statement is true?
Sure, that's a very important and I think a poignant question, particularly given the times that we live in. And if you just try and contextualize it to that verse that you're referring to around how a good man leaves an inheritance for his children's children. I think that's part of the things that are quite critical that we contextualize that question under. You know, a good man doesn't leave an inheritance only for his children. But in other words, a good man sets up even the children that are to come out from that generation as well. So in other words, mm-hmm. we must start thinking two generations or more in terms of financial freedom and leaving an inheritance for your children. It's not enough that you leave it for your children, but you must leave enough for your children to also support their children as well. So which is a very, very critical concept. And once you start thinking about that, you realize the kind of challenges that we have, but also you think about where our mindset should be, you know, as you mentioned, I speak quite a lot on money issues, even in the church. And I always challenge my audience wherever I speak that we need to have a mindset that thinks 20 years to 40 years later, and not a mindset that thinks the next day, the next month, the next week, or whatever the case might be. Because I think that fuels what is called consumerism, where we are all about consuming now and not mm-hmm. necessarily thinking about the next generation. I just wanted to bring that context because I think it's very important as well. I once had a conversation with a friend and a colleague in the industry who said to me, trust fund babies are born retired, you know? And I thought to myself,
that was a powerful statement right there.
Very powerful statement, right? I thought that was mind-boggling because what that means is they don't need to work. They are born retired because they are born with the very same thing that the verse is trying to tell us, which is they have an inheritance. In other words, someone, somewhere, a generation or two thought about money differently, right? And the way they approached and dealt with money and the way they utilized money was thinking forward as opposed to thinking for the now or, if you like, thinking backwards, right? So that's the thing. So my personal view is both a yes and a no, and I'll qualify why I'm saying that. And I know it might be a bit of a challenge to kind of answer it like that, but I think that's what it is. The answer to that question is no, simply because I think that as the African continent, particularly black people for that matter, which is the vast majority of the people you find in the African continent in any ways, we come from a system that systematically marginalized black people from taking, you know, a participation in economic activity that would have ensured that they were able to build not only for their generation, but for the generations that were to come after them. Whereas if you kind of look at how the other guys, our compatriots, are set up. They are set up in such a way that some of them is still old money that they got from two or three or four generations earlier, you know, so they're able to continue with that and kind of build a generational wealth for the next, because they too come from generational wealth, right? But because of the system that marginalized a big part of the black people in the African continent, you find that we start off from a back foot, right? Where the issue of setting up and putting up, leaving a legacy for the next generation starts with first you correcting what was marginally a systematic exclusion a generation or two before, right? So you almost sit at the middle where you must make that change, that type of a thing. So that's no from that end. But I also think it's a yes, we don't leave anything for our generation, because the kind of generation that we're living in now is a generation that is fueled by a lot of, I suppose, instant love for instant gratification and love for kind of the things that we have access to right now, which the generation before didn't have. So I'll make an example. If you glance back at 10, 15 years ago, the internet perhaps wasn't there, right? And so information around how to manage money, how to grow your wealth, and all those sort of stuff were not there, right? We couldn't access that information unless, like I was saying, you're coming from a generation that was privileged because of the system, so you would know. But if you're coming from a generation that wasn't privileged, you wouldn't have that information. But with the advent of internet, the website, and all those sort of stuff, it has made access to these things a little bit easier, right? So because it's easier for us to access that information, the answer would then be a yes, in the sense that because we have access to everything, literally the world is our oyster, we tend to be so myopic in our thinking about money and so consumer driven, right, around how we handle our money, and we never think about the future. So that's why I'm saying it's a yes and no. And I always say then that the generation that was born 15, 20, perhaps 25 years ago, these are the guys that are perhaps at their prime at this particular point in time, right? Either they have access to well-paying jobs, some of them in businesses, they can start and run businesses that previous generations couldn't do. We're seeing quite a lot of black people, particularly young, under 35, that are exposed to opportunities that the ones older than 35 did not have. So that generation, I think, has no reason whatsoever to not start building generational wealth right after that, so that they can leave a legacy for their children. But like I said, I think access to things that we have has sort of made us so consumer driven. We are consumerist in a way that we don't think about the future. And that's the sad part, right? That's the sad part about it, because we have access to these things, but we are not thinking about how to maximize on these things, how to take advantage of these things that we have. I suppose when you have comfort and you have access to things, and the world is so big and so open for you that possibilities are everywhere, it can be kind of overwhelming for young people to then make good decisions about that. But we need to start thinking differently. Especially, like I said, the generation that has access to information, access to these things. We need to start educating ourselves around financial literacy and the management of money, because that becomes very important. But it's a sad case within us. So those that were systematically, perhaps the chances of them changing that a little. But I think the generation that's then born into the new democracy and new Africa have an opportunity to then leave, generational wealth for the next generation. And like I'm saying, we need to start pitching our thinking and our approach to managing money to the next 20, next 30, next 40 years, so that that verse becomes a reality, even if not in my generation, but in the generation that will come after us. We need to start thinking like
For sure,
that.
man, for sure. Because you find that things like colonialism, apartheid, such systems, they did a number on our grandparents and our parents, you see, and even on some of us, some of our fellow brothers, you see. So because of that, they could not really, get a hold of the opportunities that their white counterparts, should I say, or other races had. And I guess it is very, very true. So, which brings me to the issue of financial literacy, Tapelo. You find that it's something that a lot of people even say that it's supposed to be taught in schools. But however, they say that it's one of the lack of financial literacy is one of the major things, one of the major reasons why most of us, the black community, do not leave anything for the next generation. So, how does one get to be taught financial literacy? What is it? And what are the benefits of having financial literacy?
Yeah, sure. That's a very big question as well. So let's start with the question of what is financial literacy, right?
Yes.
And you're quite right. It's a subject that I think should have been taught in school and in schools across the African continent as well. But sadly, it's a subject that's not been taught. Again, aspects of why it's not been taught, unfortunately, has to do with the system that we find ourselves in, and the system that was engineered to exclude, a vast majority of people from understanding about money. And when I say system, I mean it from an economic point of view. I also mean it from a religious point of view. Well, I think we also talk about how religion excludes people from financial literacy, which is the truth, because we tend to be so, as religious organizations, tend to be so focused on people giving, but we never teach them how to make what they need to give, right? And we take advantage of that opportunity as churches, because if you look at the broader part of the bigger part of the African continent is actually Christian, right? And we need to inculcate the mindset of generating income and generating money so that we can then be able to give, right? Because we can't give, and I don't think the Lord expects us to give from an empty pot, but He fills up that pot so that we can then give. So when I say systematic, I don't just mean it from an economics point of view. I also mean it from a religious point of view. I also mean it from an educational point of view. So the system is built in such a way that it really does not inculcate the issue of financial literacy into how we run, operate, behave, and all those sort of stuff, and that's where financial consumer education comes into effect. The nice thing about access to financial literacy, even though it's not a course that I think should be in our schooling system, particularly fundamental education, so now your primary, your secondary school, and all those sort of stuff, we have access to a vast majority of information that's freely available on the internet, right? For us to be able then to access at least the basics of it. You might not have gone to school and studied these things, and maybe studying them might become a little bit of onerous for some people, or it's not a subject that's of interest to some. But there's access to basic information that you can learn in financial literacy and how to be financially literate. There are books that are available that have been written out there. I mean, it's literally a plethora of them. And one can choose the one that kind of talks to them and their situation and where they are. So there's no reason for us to actually not access, at least we might not necessarily, we'll have to work at this financial literacy and getting financially free over a number of years, but at least access to information is something that we can do because of the availability of information that's on the internet. There's books, there's access and all those sort of stuff. So we have no reason whatsoever to not be able to then teach ourselves and get ourselves financially literate, you know. If that doesn't work, you've got people that have gone to school that understand this thing and can help you to then get to some level of understanding and set you up on to financial freedom. The only problem that I think we have, especially our people, is that we are so myopic in our view to money, even though we want to build financial wealth and all that and be financially free, but we are so myopic in how we approach that, to a point that I think a lot of our people are shy to consult, get into financial advisors, financial coaches, all these sort of people, because the truth of the matter is, as much as you can read it and study it and watch YouTube videos and all those sort of stuff, that's like very elementary most of the time, right? And much of it might be jargon, might be very difficult to understand. If I say diversified portfolio, it sounds very easy, but what exactly is a diversified portfolio, and what exactly should you include in there? There's aspects of risk, there's CapEx, there's OpEx, there's all these very big terms that you might need to just go and consult with someone who's in this space. So we have been systematically excluded from issues of finances and money and all that. But like I'm saying, we've got access to at least the basics and the elementary through the internet. We can read books, find other sources as well. But then we also have the aspect of consulting with someone who has done a little bit of work and understands this space quite very well. I know a lot of people who have taken the short route and they got banned, lost a lot of money because they thought the short route was easier. I can do this thing. I don't bring in a Malvin, for example, because why should I pay Malvin if I can also just directly invest in the stock exchange? Well, you can do that because you have access to that, but it doesn't mean that you will get the best returns. You need someone who understands the market, who understands trends, who has done a little bit of regression analysis, which is a huge statistical, mathematical, complicated way to look at, stocks and markets and investing and all those sort of stuff, who then can be able to de-risk what you are trying to do. Look at your blind spots in your portfolio or in your investment strategy or whatever it is that you want to achieve. So there is an element of consulting that's very important, and that's what people are not getting to. And then you see, I'm getting to your questions, and I'm trying to build a case here to that last question. When we talk about financial literacy, right, we talk about a lot of aspects, but in its basic form, what we are talking about is we're talking about four or five things: your earnings potential, and that's a huge topic on its own, and we could dissect it for days. But what we are trying to do there, when we talk about financial literacy, the first part of it, or one of the first parts of it, being about your earnings, it's about the fact that you've got a limited number of paychecks over your working life, right? Even if you run a business, you've got a limited number of years that your business would make sense. If you don't believe me, I'll make an example. We spoke about this on Business Sense the other day, that Pick n Pay, who would have thought that it's now in financial trouble and they are closing down? The Ackermans family, who are running Ackermans and Pick n Pay, they are now stepping out. They're like, hey, this thing is becoming. So at some point, you've got a limited number of resources, right? So young people need to realize that when they enter the job market, they only have a finite number of years in which they can then be able to start generating wealth and generating financial freedom. The truth of the matter is, statistically, by the time you get to 40, you are already, unless you upskill yourself somehow with I suppose what's happening in the markets in terms of what are the jobs that are being driven in the market, because the world is changing, technology is really changing the face of many industries, right? The way we used to do accounting is not the same because there's AI, generative AI, that can do financial statements. So do you need an accountant? We need to be thinking about those sort of stuff. Because if I can sit here and give it numbers and it will give me the financial statements, the statement of comprehensive income, to give me the balance sheet, cash flow statements and all that, why do I need an accountant? Because that can be done by generative AI and it can do this thing. So technology is really changing the face of many industries. So which means your earnings potential is also affected, right? Affected. So you need to start thinking, how much time do I have to earn? So how many paychecks do I have? And what is it that I need to do in between to make myself a little bit more relevant? So by 40, your earnings potential actually starts going down. And I always say that unless by 40, you are some sort of executive in a company, or you are running your own business and all that, when things go south, they start right there. Start with people that they feel that, these ones can go, we can do without them. Especially when you get to 40, they look at you as you are becoming slowly redundant in the company because you are old.
Eight.
And old people become very difficult to change. They don't change very easily. And
Okay,
it all
okay.
Unless a company doesn't change with the markets, it also becomes irrelevant. It's going to lose market share. It's going to lose people in the, because people change, consumer behavior change, people's preferences of certain products change, right? And all those sort of stuff. So what people used to drink is not what they drink today, right? What people used to eat back then is not necessarily what they eat today. So earnings are very important. As a young person, you need to understand what's your earning potential and start working towards that. So that's the first part. Educate yourself about your earning potential. How much time do you have? What can you do to keep yourself relevant? And now it's keep earning money, or if not, earn a little bit more. If you need, you need to keep on studying, educate yourself a little bit more, and all the sort of stuff. So that's the first part of financial literacy. Then you've got what some analysts actually bind it together, but for me, it's two different things. The other part is savings, and then the other one is investing. Now, it's very important that whatever money you earn, a part of it needs to be saved, right? There's a book that was written in the early 1900s, 1926 or so, if I'm not wrong there. It talks about the richest man in Babylon, right? One of the things that he mentioned was the ability to, for every $10 that you earn, at least you must save a dollar of that money. That way, you're starting to create an environment of financial, wealth and financial freedom. Because every dollar you earn and add every single month as you save, by the end of the year, you've got money, X amount of money that you can then, because of compound interest and all the other things that maybe your financial advisor can help you to articulate and all that, you might even start building more wealth the following year. And then it becomes a rolling cycle where you are making money. But it's very important for you to learn how to save. Very, very important. And the third one is investing. Again, savings is just, I suppose, keeping your money safe. But investing, which is the third element of financial literacy for me, like I said, even though some analysts bring it together, but for me, it's different in the sense that investing is not only just saving your money, but it's actually telling your money what to do, right? In other words, you take your money, you send it into the market, and you say, I want you to do 1, 2, 3, 4 for me, right? There's so many financial instruments that are out there. There's so many financial products that are out there. There's so many financial platforms that are out there. In fact, so confusing. That's why they, you know, a lot of people perhaps get entangled in this whole financial investing world and all that. Hence, I was saying there's a need to get a financial advisor or financial coach at some stage. But you know, you need to invest your money because it can grow. It can take advantage of compound interest. It can take advantage of other things that are happening in the markets. And all those sort of stuff. That's how you grow your wealth. So learn and teach yourself about your earning ability, teach yourself about savings, and then teach yourself about investing, which is quite very, very important. The savings part for me, I think, you know, savings should just be used for emergencies. You know, you have savings that you put aside for emergencies, but a huge part of the money that you are not spending from a consumerism point of view should be invested in the markets. You should look for products in the market that can generate high returns for you, while of course understanding your risk that is associated with those products and all that. But maybe even at a very elementary level, understand your risk appetite. Are you a risk averse person? Are you a risk neutral person? There's no such a person in the markets, by the way. But it's a concept that we deal with in the financial market. but understand your risk appetite, because some people, they invested a dollar, tomorrow it's gone and then they die. Well, some people say, it's just a dollar, so it's okay. You know, so that's what I'm saying. Having a financial advisor can give you a strategy where you have a short-term, medium-term, and long-term strategy around your investment. What is it that you must invest now for 20 years? Now, in other words, that money that you're putting for 20 years, you don't touch that money. No matter what happens, I'm saying you must have an element of the savings. The two concepts for me are very different, although related to each other. And for me, as an analyst, I see them differently. So the savings part helps you where you need to now tap into it for emergencies and all that. But the investment bit is when you say, 20 years from now, how much do I want to be worth, right? Maybe that's the number of paychecks you can have based on different factors, your education level, blah, 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 where you work, your company, the economy, business environment, blah, blah, blah. But you say maybe 20 years is what I have. How much do you want to be worth in 20 years? You know how young people talk about, I know my worth, I know my worth. And I always ask, you know your worth, but what's your financial worth? Let's talk about that. Now, that's the real wealth that we need to talk about. But have a strategy that says 20 years from now, how much do I want to be worth? And not just an arbitrary, you know, very rudimentary amount, really put it down into writing. That's why the Bible says, write the vision down. Mm-hmm. But there's an element of writing that just makes it, you know, I suppose, very, very strongly inculcated in our minds. When you look at it every day and you say, I need to be worth $5 million US dollars by the next 20 years. So that's the strategy. Mm-hmm. So you start now putting money that's going to make you 5 million rands worth in 20 years, right? So you do that, and then you look at financial instruments that can keep up with inflation so that your money is not eroded by inflation and all that, but it'll get you to five million US dollars. Then you have a medium-term strategy. What is it that you need to invest now for the medium term? What is it that you need to put amount that you need to put into different financial instruments that will give you X returns in the next medium term? Then you have your short-term investments as well. Your 3 months, your 3 to 6, 6 to 12 months. Usually in the markets, we say a year is a short-term type of a thing. 3 years is more, 3 to 5 is more like your medium. And then anything after that is more like your long-term. So invest, learn and teach yourself as part of your financial interest around investing. And I know I'm taking a bit of time, but I think these are very important concepts.
It's true.
And I'm just talking at them at a high level, because I think there's really a lot in there. Then the fourth one is knowing how to protect your money, which is insurance, right? Know how to protect your money so that, one, your money is not eroded by inflation. There are people who, I mean, literally, I had a client a couple of years ago who had saved for a whopping 7 years. I thought to myself, I've never seen someone who's saved money consistently for 7 years. But guess what? At the seventh year, that money had lost its value in the sense that what it could buy her 7 years before, it can't buy her 7 years later. So I said to her, what was the thinking really? And that's where you see there was no financial literacy. This lady was told, save, 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 because it's important. Yes, but no one said to her, well, save, but mind inflation. Because inflation is going to erode the value of your money, right? So she saved and saved and saved. But the amount of things that she could buy 7 years later, she even said to me, you know, I've saved for 7 years. I've taken pains. For 7 years, I've gone some days in a month without food, and I didn't even tap into this money. But today, when I look at what I can buy with this money, I think to myself, I've wasted myself. And I said, that's exactly what it is, because of inflation. And no one taught her. She didn't even take the initiative herself, I suppose, to learn about finances and all this. So protect, protect, protect your money. Insure your money. In fact, insure everything about yourself. If you can insure yourself. You've got life covers and all those sort of stuff, which is another element, by the way, which leaves a legacy for your children. If you've got life cover of, say, X amount, when you die, your children at least have some money that they can then, you know, continue to live, afford the same things that they were able to afford. But more importantly, if you've got a house, then your house doesn't have to be taken by the banks because you are dead and your children find themselves and your family or wife or whatever without a place to stay that they stayed in for the past 5 years or past 10 years. But, you know, because you died and they lose. So insure even your income. We've got financial products in the markets today that can insure your income so that if you ever get into an accident and can't work for 3, 6 months, you know, they will pay at least 70 to 80% of your income. You know, you can then negotiate with your creditors where you need to, so that they also reduce it to say, I'm not working anymore. I'm only getting X amount. You know, your repayments as well can be structured to that 70 to 80%. But the point is that your life continues, because I've seen people who got into terrible, terrible accidents. I've seen people who were really, really sick. I've seen people who were pregnant who came back to work simply because they can't afford to stay in their maternity leave because they don't have the money to stay in maternity. So they come back to, they leave their children who are born a week or two who really still need their parent there. To, you know, make them understand this world that we are living. We're rushing back because we are not planning. We are not consistent. We are not planning for the future as we should be. And we are not ensuring that future for that matter. Things like retirement annuities, retirement and pension funds. We don't have those things. Because we think, I'm still 22, I'm still 23. You're going to blink and you'll be 61 and you'll be faced with retirement. And then before you know it, you have to decide, hey, do I retire or not? And that's why I always make this example here in South Africa. And I think it's the same perhaps in Zim as well and other African countries. Nurses that go to work at like 70, like my guy, my lady, like really, I think my lady should have been at home. They can't because they didn't plan, right? They didn't put money aside. So protect your money, protect your current money or your earnings potential, protect your medium term, protect your long term, protect everything and anything around you, protect your goods in your house. If you've got a TV, a car, whatever, Protect these things because you never know. In insurance, and I did risk management in my undergrad as part of my course. In insurance, we say insurance is covering the eventuality, not a possibility. It's an eventuality. It's gonna happen that you're gonna
Okay.
get an accident at some stage. We don't know when, but you will. Here in South Africa, 11,000 accidents a day.
Jeez.
11,000 accidents a day. So your chances of being in an accident are quite pretty high. And we thank God that we are not in accidents because we pray in the morning when we leave, we ask God to protect us. But the fact is, you getting into an accident is an eventuality. It's not a possibility. It's an ev it will happen at some stage. So
Jeez.
protect yourself. And then, of course, the other aspects of financial literacy have to do with the issue of spending. You are earning money. You work very hard for that money. You must know how to spend it. And it must work for you. Like I said, either through savings, investment, insurance, protecting your money, all these things, they boil down to how you spend your money. And this is very important. And then last one, as I close on this one on financial literacy, we must learn how to manage our debt. Because the truth of the matter is that you will get into some debt at some stage, not unless you are a trust fund baby. Like I said, because trust fund babies are born retired, they don't need to borrow. They've got the money, it's there, you know, it was two generations ago, it's there, right? So, but for the average you and I, we are going to get into debt at some stage. And I think there's absolutely nothing wrong with that unless the debt overtakes you, right? And that's why I think the Bible says, let no debt remain outstanding except the debt of love another, because I think the Bible is quite cognizant of the fact that you will get into some debt, but just don't let it remain outstanding. What you need to do is make sure that you pay off your debt, whichever way you can, but pay off your debt. There's these little debts that we make, especially the ones that are so consumer-based, consumerism and all that. Those debts kill us a lot. People who eat on credit, for example, at your Woolworths and all these nice stores where you can eat on credit and all that. You know, those are really unnecessary debts that I think are unnecessary. The only debt that I would say is perhaps understandable and perhaps makes sense is the debt that pays itself. So, for example, if you get into vehicle debt of some sort, again, I'm not saying that's what people should do. We all have preferences. For example, I would never buy a van. Like, for me, like, no, it's not functional
Really?
for me, right? But if you come to think of it, the kind of cars that we drive, they are liabilities in that they are not making us money. But people who drive vans and buggies, they have an opportunity to use these things as a business. So the car eventually pays itself off because of the business. You are able to transport goods and charge people for that. You are able to
True.
transport people at times and charge them for that. You can use that debt to actually generate money for you. And that's the kind of debt that is what we call good debt in the markets, right? Because it's helping you to generate some sort of income, and it kind of pays itself off over time and all that. So that's kind of, but for those debts that are not necessarily income generating, we need to find a way to manage those debts effectively. For every, you know, money you make, your debts at least must be a fraction of what you make, so that you can then have money to save, to invest, to protect. And more importantly, especially for us who are Christians, the issue of inculcating in our financial literacy, our stewardship, which is quite very important, kind of is the backdrop of everything that we do around money. We are called to be stewards by God, and we are called to manage the resources that is given to us. It's so interesting to actually note that Christ spoke about money and money resources more than he spoke about prayer and all these other things that we find in the different parables and his sayings. Which someone argued, a pastor, in fact, at the GC argued that this shows how important the issues of money and material possessions are to heaven, because these things stand a very good chance of actually taking us away from God, because we can be so consumed
True.
by chasing after money, material possessions, that we actually do away with things that have to do with God. But when we understand that we are stewards and we are called by God to manage these things, even when he places them on us. And I always challenge people and I say, you know, the kind of monies that shock us in the world, that someone, Elon Musk, has got X number of billions or whatever, and we get so shocked and become so small as Christians. is a measure of how much of the faith we don't have in God, because God can give you more than what Elon Musk has. You know, the only problem is that are you a steward enough to manage that? You know, if you think about your Abraham was rich, man. He was rich,
filthy rich.
Filthy rich, in fact, but because he had a relationship with God, he knew how to manage those riches. He understood that he was a steward. I'm thinking about Job. Job was a rich man. I remember listening to him saying, man, there was no person who was rich like Job at that time. You know,
yes.
And he told the story of what happened to him, but because he was anchored with God and knew that he was a steward, even when all these things were happening, he said, I know my Redeemer lives. He was able to say that because he understood that he was a steward and everything that he did was, you know, in response to God's providences and God's great greatness. So God can give us the world. I mean, the Bible says that Psalm 20, 24, verse 1, that the earth is the Lord's and everything in it. The things that shock us about money are things that to God are like, really, like, guys, are you shocked about Elon Musk being worth X number of billions of US dollars? What makes us think you can't? God can give us. In fact, Ellen White says, God can rain on us silver and gold if he so chose, but he wants to work with us so that we become instruments to make a positive change in the communities where we live. And so, financial literacy is important, and I've tried to just break down some of the elements at a very high level. Like I said, there's really deep issues within those elements.
For sure, man. For sure. For sure.
About your earnings, your savings, interest, investment, protecting, spending, and borrowing money in a sustainable way and underpinned by stewardship is what is important around financial literacy.
Wow. Wow, man. It's so much to learn. You see, the thing is, I never really, really thought along those lines, and here you are. You are giving advice, not just to the old, but from the way I was looking at it, I was thinking that this is for those people who've got families, old people, grandmas, guys with kids and things like that. But I'm thinking this is something that you need to train yourself from a very, very, very young age.
Definitely. Definitely. And I think for people who don't have families and kids, and it's an opportunity for you to trial things out, right? And make mistakes here and there, because you will make mistakes and all that. But set yourself up and set your family up as well, so that when you then have kids, they don't have to go through what we have gone through, right? They don't have to suffer the way we did. We thank God that we live in a world where there's a little bit of some semblance of democracy and all those sort of stuff, despite, you know, the different challenges that each country faces. But largely speaking, we live in a world where we still have the right to go to church. We still have the right to make our own decisions around certain things, you know. Like I said, albeit very limited in some instances. But the point is that we are still free to make those decisions. So if you don't have faith, if you don't have family, you have an opportunity to set yourself up and set your family up, so that by the time you have those their family and kids and all that, they live a better life than you did. And you can then share these kind of experiences that you had with them, so that you set them up as well. They know and grow, knowing some of these principles. You inculcate them every day in their lives. They grow up knowing these things, so that they too get set up. That's the thing about financial literacy, right? It just needs one person in the generation to change how they look at money and how they use money. And then the generations that then come after that, I tell you, they've been set up because someone changed their thinking and how they looked at and behaved around money. Money is exciting, man. I must be honest.
For sure, man. I'm sure the listeners are actually agreeing with you, right? The money is exciting. But I love what you said. It just takes one person, man. Just one person to change the way they view money. And then they can set up the next generation, you know, for good sometimes. You know, for good. We've got so many people who are enjoying the luxuries of their ancestors, so to say. So, man, we need that as the black community, especially because we're the ones who are on the back foot as far as this one is concerned. Because, man, having the average black family leaving $0 to the next generation. Now that's sad. We need to change the narrative, man. You know, this is a big subject. I think it needs a if it was church, we would say a 2-week effort just addressing people as far as this this topic is concerned, man. So thank you so much, Taps, you know, for allowing me to hijack you and give you this very, very important task of, you know, educating the listeners as far as the issue of, you know, the issue of financial literacy, especially, is concerned. So having a bit of business sense on the weekend chapter, that was fabulous, Taps.
Thank you so much, Marvin, and all the best to your listeners as well. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much. So that was the man Tapelo Moloi, in case you're wondering. Well, that's a familiar voice. Make sure that you check him out every weekday from Monday to Thursday. He'll be doing his thing, talking more about money, making sense of money and God. I love how he says that. So, Taps, man, once more, thanks so much for coming through to the weekend chapter.
Adventist World Radio SID Media. We are not general practitioners. We are specialists in Bible-based content.